I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I had the best weekend of my life.
As you should.
I am so sad that you were not there.
Listen, you're not the only one that was sad. I got big FOMO.
Everyone's like, are you like the podcaster like by yourself? And I was like, no, she just had to go see a family member get married. I told her not to go. I was like, she should have been here.
But yes, should have been an email.
It should have been live stream.
Oh my gosh, could you imagine?
It'd be pretty wild. So for those that do not know, we got the chance to go to RomanticyCon this last weekend. And had the best time ever. It was so much fun. I wanted to live there. I was not ready for the weekend to end.
Way for you to like go to your first convention, but you pick like the biggest convention to go to as your first.
Yeah, so I had never been to a convention before. It was pretty wild. I was very excited. So, when I went to this convention, I didn't really know what to expect, right? Because obviously, like, I had never gone to a book convention, so this was my first one. But people are so big on trading.
Trading?
Like, trading things. There was, like, trade circles, and people would have all of these amazing... It's wild. Okay, so I brought stickers and I brought some merch, and then like the Moiré sisters helped. She was like, "Here's a bookmark. So, like, go trade, go have fun." And I was like, "Okay." Aww. And so you just find people, and they had like these book carts, right, that they are tailing around, and a lot of them like said, "Ask me for trades," like in stickers. So ooh. I want to show you some of the really cute things that I got. This is not even all of it. I probably have 100 bookmarks now. Everybody had bookmarks, which is amazing. I have so many bookmarks. So here's some of the things that I got. Okay, so I tracked this group down, this man and woman, because everyone had one of these things. And I was like, I don't know where they are, but I want one so bad. So I have this rose that is handmade.
That's
and these
so
are out
pretty.
Of so pretty, right? And these are out of pages out of a book.
And
every day they had a different theme. Right? I could never make this. And they're out of a different theme. So this theme was Life of a Book Girl. And these are like orange and turquoise for Taylor Swift. That's so clever.
I'm about to say something.
It was
that's
amazing.
Very hot take.
Uh-oh. That you don't like Taylor Swift? It's okay if you don't.
Yeah, I'm not a Swiftie. I respect the hustle.
That's fair.
But it's not for me.
I like Taylor Swift. I do. I really do. I did not realize that this album that she dropped was NSFW. We listened to it in the car with all my children.
No.
And I listened to what's called Father Figure. And my husband's in the, like, he's driving. We're jamming. We're like, ooh, this is a good song. And then it said something bad. And I was like, and I like quickly like slammed the radio off, and he was like, "What the fuck did she just say?" And I was like, "I don't know. It's Taylor Swift. I thought it was safe." So Taylor Swift is in her NSFW, not safe for work era. Good for you, queen.
Yeah,
pop
I
off.
I haven't
I'm
listened
cool
to it, but a lot of people are saying that she's trying to be like Sabrina Carpenter, who I love.
They did a collab. They did a whole song together. She's allowed to cuss in her songs. Like she's not created for my children. I just didn't realize I was just like, oh, it's Taylor Swift, we're fine. And it was not fine, and now I know.
Would you want to know something?
So, I mean, good for you, Queen.
Like, I know that they did a collab on, I couldn't tell you what song it was, but like,
I think it's called Life of a Showgirl.
Maybe. But like, I know that they did a collab and it says like her and then featuring Sabrina Carpenter, but allegedly Taylor Swift is also like just in a little crumb of Goodbye. Allegedly. I don't know because I don't know what her voice sounds like.
Okay.
But it's like the part, have you heard the song?
The, from Goodbye. Like by Sabrina Carpenter?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you know the part where she's like, wait, when did you get here? And then someone's like, go put on some clothes. People are saying that's Taylor Swift.
Oh, that's fine. What a little Easter egg.
Allegedly.
I feel like when Alyssa edits this episode, we're going to get a text message, I'm sure, because she is a huge, huge Taylor Swift fan. So if anyone's going to know if she's an Easter egg in that song, it would be Alyssa. So we will know in a week. Our questions will be answered. But here's what else I got. Okay, so I know that you have not read this book. From our friends who have read this book and seen our social medias, Assistant to the Villain is a book that I am obsessed with.
Is it The Little Foggy?
And in, yes. Look, no. Someone gave me a teeny, tiny, how do I do the hand thing?
I was about to say
a teeny, little. Tiny little Kingsley.
That's so
and
cute.
I love him. And then we were eating lunch, and then this weekend was so unreal. I can't. So, like, I posted a big QR code on my book tote of, like, our podcast, right? Like, you know, so I could hand out stickers and meet authors and things like that. And this guy was like, hey, can you tell me about your podcast? Like, just came up to us at lunch. And I was like, of course. Yes, have a seat. Here's our podcast. And he had a whole bag, and I'm talking a big bag, of 3D printed dragons. And he was like, do you want a 3D printed dragon?
Was he a vendor or just a person?
I don't know.
I was so excited
and so distracted that I forgot to ask. And I looked for him all. Oh, we have twins.
Yeah, because this one was from a vendor. And it was like, and it was a part of a goodie bag.
I am obsessed. And I should have, I didn't think of it. I should have been like, what's your name and handle so I can tag you and say thank you again for my little dragon. So if anyone knows, if you're at RomanticyCon and you know the man that had the big bag of dragons, please let me know.
What a way to be identified.
Yeah, I know, right? I was like, where is he? And then I bought a book. I didn't buy too many books because I was like,
I always put myself on a book ban buy.
But I did. This book really caught my eye. So it's by Maxim Martineau, and if I pronounce it wrong, I'm so sorry. I always mess it up. But it's called House of Blight.
Ooh.
Look at that cover. Isn't that pretty?
She looks spooky.
I really am excited to read this. The author she was at her table. She was so nice and so kind. And I got a bookmark. Told you they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And all the authors that are there, when you buy their books, like at their table, they signed them and she made it out to the Goodish Girls.
Aww.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah. I love that she made it out, but I like read the whole thing where it's like to the Goodish Girls, beware the blight, and like, ooh, spooky.
Yeah. Now we need to read it, beware. So it was very exciting. I had the best time of my life. I can't wait till next year.
I'm so excited.
I'm ready. Next year, because we went to the ball, I have dresses planned. Because I had, like, just a regular black, like, little gown. But there was some girls there that went all out.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to be that girl.
As you should.
I want to, like, have, like, wings that go to the ground. I wore wings that night for the first time in my life, and I was like,
props to you for wearing wings. I'm like, I love the idea, but I feel like I would run into so many people accidentally and be like, I'm
they
so
were
sorry.
Fairly small wings. They were like, they were very small. So, and thankfully I'm short enough that the wings hit everybody's like chin level.
Yeah, no, I'd be smacking people in the face.
right in the eyeball.
I'd be a hazard.
That's fair. Yeah. So I had a great time. It was literally the best.
I'm so happy for you.
Next time you're going to go. We're going to go together.
No one's getting married. Everything's...
Nobody.
No one even think about getting married next fall.
Yeah, you need to send out your calendar to your family in advance so they know not to book it on that day.
Well, I wasn't even expecting to go because I'd already gone to one event. And then, like, literally everyone and their mother was like, oh, like, because you reached out to me and you're like, oh, I'm going to go to this thing if you want to tag along. And then one of my friends, she was, like, going to gift me a pass for my birthday. And mm-hmm. she was like, you can come. And I'm like, I want to go so bad, but I can't. If it wasn't family, I would have been like, mm-hmm. I'm sick.
I can't go.
Oh, no.
Yes, next year for sure you will be there.
Because I wanted to meet Rebecca Yarros.
I did not meet Rebecca Yarros. I met so many good authors. So many indie authors and traditional authors, and I learned a lot about them all. And we met so many really, really kind vendors, and I got to see all of their hard work and creations. So like, it was amazing. And we met another podcast. We met the Bookmarks and Banters podcast girls, and they're so nice. They were so kind and welcoming. And so they did a panel, like they hosted a panel, which was amazing to watch and see. Yeah, same. So they did a great job. So we got to meet them and kind of connect. So overall, I think it was pretty good. All right, 10 out of 10. So before we get started into our chapters today, I want to take a moment because as a podcast, like Who Deep Dives Fantasy and Romantic series, we love a trip to the big bookstores, right? Like I love to go to a big bookstore. However, I do want to take a moment to recognize and give a huge shout out to indie bookstores, so independent bookstores. And there's one specifically that we recently discovered that I think does a wonderful job. So Flights of Fantasy Bookshop is an online fantasy and romance bookshop that also has the cutest bookish accessories. We recently received a box from them that was put together so well. So like if you go to their website, you will find all of the latest books, like at least a lot of the latest books that are out and about in the world. But you'll also find signed copies, which I thought was really interesting because when you go to a big bookstore, I don't see, like, you know what I mean? You don't really find signed copies of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Unless like the author showed up and like signed a couple copies, you know what I mean? Like randomly, but there's actually like a section on their website that is for just signed copies. And most of those signed copies come with like book art and bookmarks and stickers and like things that go along with that book. There was one on there that was a cowboy romance. And I was like, Madison would love this. And received a box from them. You wouldn't. I think you'd be cowboy romance girly for sure. Have you done cowboy romance?
I grew up in cowboy romance culture with like kids to school with the big hats and the big belt buckles. Yeah. I want to experience a cowboy romance. Just say I did it, but I feel like it would remind me.
Those are cowboy boys. We're talking cowboy men. Rural Montana. I don't know if you'd get the ick. I would like you to try it as an experiment.
I can
see you being cowboy romance girly.
Because someone recommended, I think it was Elsie Silver, who it's cowboy, but they're like Canadian cowboys.
I love that. Maybe. I have never read her books, but that's really funny.
She's the one that I see everywhere. And my friend, she made me read a couple of lines to, I think, the first book. And listen.
So good, I bet.
I'll try, but it can't be like too cowboy. Otherwise, I'm just gonna get the ick and DNF.
I mean, I don't think he's gonna like milk a cow in the book.
I'm not saying I don't know.
Like what does too cowboy mean to you? Is the question.
That's
like, what do they have to do?
I don't even know.
Just read one, and if it gives you the ick, we'll go from there. But I don't think it will.
Because I have an audio for a reel in mind that I want to do for a cowboy romance. I feel like growing up and people who think they're cowboys, cowboy culture, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, that's the same with me and football players.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. We'll see. We did receive a package from Flight of Fantasy Bookshop, though. And I tell you what, though, when I opened this package, it was so well put together. I could tell that someone put so much time and love and effort into it. Because, like, when I order a book from Amazon or when I order it from a big bookstore, it's literally just a book. It's just a book. They throw in a box. They send it on my way, right? This had...
You're hungry. For nothing.
For nothing. Yes. Not Flight of Fantasy, though. It was in this cutest little box, and they had stickers on the outside. I did try to peel them off to, like, save them. It didn't work. But they look very nice. And then when you open it, there's, like, a handwritten letter in there. Aww. Which was... so cute. You guys know I love a good handwritten letter. I can't write one because my handwriting is atrocious, but I do like receiving a handwritten letter. It's very kind. And then there was chocolate in there. She sent us like Dove chocolates.
Ooh,
that's so thoughtful.
Dove chocolate.
Right? And then there was like extra bookmarks from her store that were so cute. They were like fall themed. We got like this cute chained bookmark. It's like a little astronaut on the moon.
Oh, that's so cute.
It's really cute. And then we got a book cover. Like, you would put a book in to keep it safe as you're traveling or things like that so the pages don't get bent, which is
safe,
really, really cute.
Or just incognito mode.
Yeah, incognito. That's right. And then the book was wrapped so nicely, and we got a signed copy. So overall, like, 100 stars out of 100 stars for this bookshop. I have never received a book package from a bookstore that was so put together. I want all of you guys to have the opportunity to go to Flights of Fantasy Bookshop and check out their website, and I want to give you guys 10% off your first order. So when you go, put all the things in your cart, and then you can use goodishgirls10 at checkout for 10% off your first order, and that's your whole order. So go check out Flights of Fantasy Bookshop. Check them out on social media. Check out their website. Everything will be in our show notes, too. So go give them some support. Let's support some indie bookstores.
I like it. Picasso.
Picasso. All right. Let's do it. So welcome to the Goodish Girls. My name is Dallas.
I'm Madison.
And today we are deep diving chapters 69 through 74 of Crescent City.
I don't want to. We start off with a sad moment.
I know we do. So, as per usual, we will be deep diving the Crescent City spoiler-free for the first half. So, we're taking you through a guided tour of Crescent City, spoiler-free. Once that is done, then we are jumping into the House of Theories and Lore, where we'll be talking spoilers throughout the entire Massiverse. So, be ready for that. If you have finished the series, come with us. If not, then you can hang out and come back when you are ready. So, Chapter 69, Madison, start us off.
I don't wanna.
I know.
I don't wanna.
I know. This isn't even the saddest chapter of the whole series. The saddest chapter of the whole series is in the next episode that we are doing, and I am not ready for that. And I'm debating on whether or not you'll be reading that chapter or I'll be reading that chapter, because I don't know which one I'm not gonna cry in, because that's the goal, is to not cry, because every time I listen or read that chapter, I sob. So.
Yeah. It's fine. Reading's fun, they said.
Is it fine? Is it fun? I'm not having a good time. It'll be fun, they said.
We love emotional trauma. That's why I read fantasy. It's fine.
Yeah, for real.
Anywho, chapter 69. We're with Hunt. He's in a holding cell under the Comitium, and Homeboy is going through it. He's not okay. He's essentially just disassociating with himself, with everything that has gone on since everything went down with the whole synth deal that happened on the boat not too long ago. He only eats because his body demands that he does so, and I get it. Been there, done that. It's not fun. And he's in the cell. The only form of the outside world that he has access to is there is a TV on the wall across from him, and it is broadcasting a live stream of Justinian, who still remains on the crucifix in the lobby. We learn that Justinian will remain there for 7 days before being dumped into the Estros, and that there are no sailings for traitors. Victoria's essence has already again been ripped from her body and is trapped in the box and has already been dumped in the trench as well. And the thought of her suffering alone makes Hunt sick. As it should. Because that's... I can't even imagine. Wow.
It reminds me of... I've obviously never done it. But Microsoft developed a room that is,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, the quietest room in the world. It's like negative decibels.
And isn't there like a time limit?
Yeah, you, if you're in there for like up to an hour, I think you win something like money or I don't know, a high five from the leaders of Microsoft. I don't know. You get something fun. But people can't, no one has ever lasted the hour.
Yeah, I bet.
I don't know. I think I could dig it. Do they put a, have they put a mom in there yet? Have they put a mother in there who has three children?
I think
she'd have a great time.
If I went in there for an hour, I just wouldn't have to think about it. Because I also feel like, I don't know how big the room is, but I feel like for me, I would maybe get claustrophobic. But I feel like as long as no one...
It looks pretty big on the video.
Interesting. I feel like as long as no one could hear me, like if it was noise canceling, which I'm pretty sure it is, like...
It is.
Perfect. So I'd be like, you know what? I'll try it. I'll just close my eyes and I'll be karaoke-ing my way through the whole entire thing. Because then that's how you can tell time. Because that's what I used to do whenever I did acupuncture for my stomach, to like know what time it is, because you're literally laying on this table with needles in you. I would literally just like sing the same songs over and over again. That way I would know like how long I've been on the table, and I'd be like, oh, they're running late, mm-hmm. because I usually don't get through five songs.
Yeah, that's fair. You could do that. I would probably take a nap. I think most mothers would probably just be.
I can't do naps.
Without going, mom, mom. Mom,
my son
recently, yes, my son recently learned to say mama this weekend.
Aww.
Right now, it's so cute. 1 week from now, it will not be cute anymore. Because it's his favorite word now, because it's the only word he knows.
But that's cute.
Yeah, he's like, mom, mom, mom. Moms will get this. People who are not moms, I don't, it looks so cute. But then when you're trying to use the restroom or shower or do the dishes or breathe or exist, you're like, if I hear my name one more time, I'm going to have a BF. Wow. I'm going to freak out.
Not a BF.
Yes. So put a mother in the room. She would survive. So yes, it's very sad for Victoria.
I feel really bad
for her.
But I always will get random, like, baby talk videos. And there was this one where I saw where a mom was in the bathroom. And she was like, I'm having a little bit of me time. Like, just give me a few moments. And this kid literally was like, I forgot what he grabbed. But he was getting something to try to, like, pick the lock. And he did it. But she had, like, opened the drawer in the bathroom. So that whenever he opens the door, like, the drawer stops it.
That's clever.
And he was like... Can you close the drawer? And she's like, no, I'm having some me time.
Sure can't.
I feel like that'd be my fear.
As a mother, getting time in the bathroom by yourself to do anything, mm-hmm. like even just get ready for the day, is not a thing. And so I have to tell I'm like, girl, you're 7, almost 8 years old. You do not need to be in here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is it an emergency? Are you bleeding? Are you hurt? Is something wrong? No. Can I have a snack?
No, that's an emergency.
I just want to see what you're doing. Well, you're almost 8. You don't need to be here anymore. Like, yeah. I love you so much. I'll be out in a couple minutes. Please go find anything else to do.
I know for me it's cute right now, but I know that whenever the time comes, I will be like, leave me alone.
Yes.
Go.
We love them. Like, I want to be with them, mm-hmm. but I also am still a human being. So, yes, can I sit in the Microsoft room? Can I submit my application? I think I can do it.
You go for it.
I think I can do it. We'll see.
Well,
yes.
Victoria can't, because she's suffering.
She sure cannot. Well, she has to. No choices.
All right, Pete. Anywho.
No $1 million
for her. Also, so, you know, Justinian, he's slowly dying on the crucifix. Victoria losing her mind. Hunt, even though he's in this holding cell, he's also having to re-go through his wings growing back. And I can't even imagine, because he talks about it itching. And I always hate, like, whenever, if you have ever gone to, like, the dermatologist and gotten a biopsy, or, like, if you have an allergic reaction and stuff itches and you just can't, like, mm-hmm. I go out of my mind for that. But, like, that's such a long process for a wings to regrow. Mm-hmm. But I did try to find the humor in it, because he says that they're like little fledgling wings. So to me, yeah, it's like very
Deadpool.
I was thinking Bumblebee, but you go for Deadpool.
Like little, like when he loses a hand, it's like a little baby hand. He has little baby wings.
That, see, I haven't, I've seen the first Deadpool movie and it was okay. I know. I'm sorry. It was all right. It's not my favorite.
I'm judging you.
As you should. Because whenever I think of like the whole regrowing the hands, I know what you mean by like Deadpool baby hands, but I just think of like the little, like the little toy hands that people use.
Yes, that's like, exactly what it is.
Like that. That's yes. what I think of.
And then he has like, when he loses legs, little baby legs.
That's creepy.
It, yes, but it, it is, but it's part of it.
I don't like
which
that.
Is why he has little baby wings.
I'm just going to say the Bumblebee. Bumblebee's less creepy. It's cute.
Like, it makes it feel or, better. Like, you whatever know, makes you feel better.
How into Barbie were you?
Ish.
Because there is, I think I've only seen it once, but it's the Barbie Fairytopia, and people always talk about the little puff ball.
Yes, with the purple Bibble. Guy. Yes, I, yeah. I know what we're talking about.
That Hunt is also just Bibble.
Hunt is Bibble. Okay. Whatever makes you happy.
I connect to someone watching. They'll be like, yes, I love that.
Yes, there's people are for Bubble or people are for Deadpool.
And I'm
either way, early. Teeny tiny angel wings.
As his wings are regrowing and they're starting to itch, he mentions that each time he attempts to scratch the wings, he is overcome by a blinding pain. He also says that no one has visited him in 6 days aside from Isaiah, and although he has no windows, he has no way of telling what time or day it is. The only way he can tell is, luckily, the only good thing from that TV is that he is able to see the sun pass over the Comitium lobby, and that's how he can tell time. That is very, very smart.
Mm-hmm.
So I applaud him on that. But as he's thinking about the fact that no one has visited in 6 days, the doors to the Comitium cells open, and a female scent comes through, although it is not Bryce that is the one that greets him. Instead, it is Sandriel.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. Sandriel. But...
Oh, it's fancy.
Listen, ever since I heard Delaney call Azriel Azriel, I'm like, I love the little pizzazz.
Yes, the L.
But she doesn't get pizzazz because she's a horrible person. Because to toy with Hunt, aside from her appearance alone, because again, she was in a pretty much identical twin to Shahar, she cues up Hunt's cell phone to show on the TV screen. And instead of the TV screen showing Justinian, it now shows essentially Sandriel going through Hunt's phone. She goes through his text messages, and that's whenever he sees that Bryce changed her name for the last time to Bryce thinks Hunt is the best. And if that ain't the real kicker, oof, that nickname did not age well.
Sure did not.
But...
We've talked about this before, right? Like, through these episodes, we've kind of given you guys a nod to remember all the times that, like, the name has been changed or, like, photos have been taken, because this is where it's circling back around.
Yes. So after Sandriel gets bored looking at the text messages, she then decides to go through his photo, and she cues up the slideshow feature, and it plays all the photos that Bryce and Hunt took over the past few weeks. So it has photos of them together, it has photos that Bryce took of Hunt or Hunt took of Bryce, and it has him with Syrinx or Lehaba, kind of like posing like a little pinup girl, as she should, because pop off. Also has a random photo of Jelly Jubilee and Co. And the photos essentially show someone with a life, and it is a reminder of what he had felt to have a home or someone who has cared about if he lived or died, and he hasn't had someone ever feel like that for him.
Yeah.
Which is so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not a big fan of Hunt and Bryce together, but, like, I just want him to be happy.
He does deserve to be happy.
I
do like Hunt and Bryce together.
You know what?
Not right now, because I'm out of him. But
Yeah. Well, we'll go
in a couple chapters.
Yeah, we'll discover my, you'll see my viewpoint as we continue in this series, because I have words, but anywho,
I'll be waiting.
I'll bring my receipts. The screen goes dark and the photos start replaying again, and Hunt realizes that essentially this fun little slideshow of the life he could have had is another form of torture. Sanjul asks what Shahar would think of all this, about his dream of living a domestic life, but Hunt doesn't feel the guilt that he thought he would, because as this book has progressed, every time, like, Shahar is mentioned, or he, like, kind of has an inkling towards liking Bryce, he's like, oh, but I shouldn't because of Shahar. But this is, like, the first time he's like, oh, I'm not thinking of Shahar, and that's okay, and it is okay.
Yeah, okay.
We love growth.
But, and healing, right? Like, it's been a really long time. He's allowed to move on.
Oh, yeah. It's been literal decades for this kid.
Mm-hmm.
But as I feel like Sandro's picking up that, like, the Shahar thing isn't doing it for him. So he's right. Like, okay, this isn't going to work. She moves on to remark how Bryce will either move on in life with an inferior male or end up in the trash like the other half-breeds, and that she will move on with her life while they move on with theirs.
Yeah.
At that little last remark, Hunt finally drags his gaze from the TV screen to look at Sandriel, where she says, "Didn't they tell you?" And Hunt realizes that the reason that Sandriel was allowed to look through his phone was because it also now belongs to Sandriel, just like he does.
Ouch. Yeah, that sucks.
Again.
I hate it.
Someone put Hunt in the bubble. Let me protect him.
Yeah.
But that is where Hunt's POV ends in this chapter, and then we pick it back up with Bryce. Bryce walks to a bar where she finds Flynn flirting with a female and Rune drinking a whiskey. She walks over to Rune to thank him for looking out for her the other day when Fury had asked him to look after her after everything went down. And at that, Rune stares up at the ceiling tiles. And Bryce is like, "What?" And Rune says, "I'm checking to see if the sky is falling since you're thanking me for something." And I needed this little banter moment. I needed a crumb of happiness. But Rune asks how Bryce has been holding up, and she says she's been better. Rune mentions how he thought Hunt's priorities had changed recently, and Bryce tacked on that their dad had thought the same thing. She tells Rune about how her dad said she was more like him than she realizes, and Rune tries to reassure her, saying that she's nothing like him. And then just to add a little bit more sweetness after the sad thing with Hunt, Rune invites Bryce to his place in a couple weeks for a sunball showing, and Bryce tries to turn it down, but he asks her to just come for a period, and if she wants to leave, she can. And then we have this little bit of dialogue between them where Bryce says, "Why keep bothering?" And Rune says, why keep pushing me away, Bryce? It wasn't just about the fight. And then Bryce says, "Before Danica, you were my best friend, and it doesn't matter. Maybe we could start over on a trial basis." Rune was grinning as he promised to save a seat for Bryce. And that is so cute. Where this chapter ends. But I want to circle back around to this little interaction, because I feel like I read too much into it, as I do, because overthinking is my specialty. But the part that kept me up at night was whenever Rune says, "Why keep pushing me away, Bryce? It wasn't just about the fight." And then Bryce says, "Before Danica, you were my best friend, and it doesn't matter now." So what do you think of that line? Like, do you think, because, like, as we know, the fight between them was they were getting into it, and then Rune called her a half-breed slut. And then he was saying it wasn't just about the fights. I'm like, what else?
That's interesting. I don't think that I thought too much into it. I know
no
that...
No one probably did except for me.
Yeah, maybe. It's okay. That's our job. We're supposed to overthink things. So I do feel like it is because he is the Starborn Prince, right? So, like, I think it does have a possibility. Because there's some information that I do know from the other parts of the series that I don't want to spoil. But I think that the heritage and where Rune stands in the line for the throne is a big part of it.
Okay. It's been so long since I've read these books. I honestly sometimes feel like a first-time reader. So I'm just like, what happens to the other two books? Like,
what does it mean?
I know some things, but, like, the details, I couldn't tell you. I'm with you guys.
And she does go into that, like, later on down the line in the series, like, about her thoughts and opinions on him taking the throne versus, like, her being in the mix, things like that. Mm-hmm. But I think that is a part of it. Like, we just have to remember that as self-sabotaging as Bryce is, she's also very selfless. Like, she would rather herself suffer and struggle than the person next to her. In my opinion.
Yes. And I want to circle back on that thought maybe whenever we go into the House of Theories and Lores, because I have a comparison to make, and you might have seen it in my notes.
I did. I'm ready to talk about it. In the Theories of Lore we go.
But not yet, because we still have chapter 70. Hydrate or dehydrate?
Drink your water. Eat your vegetables.
I know. Not a big vegetable girly. I'm the oddball in my family, but I love a salad.
Isn't that literally just a bowl of vegetables?
I mostly just like I'm here for the lettuce.
Madison, that's the worst vegetable. It has no flavor.
Listen.
It's just texture.
I was an odd child growing up. I loved oatmeal. I almost ate it every single day. Like, that was my breakfast meal of choice. Like, waffles, pancakes, forget her. Oatmeal. And then I loved a good salad. My sister loves salad now, but growing up, I loved it. She didn't care for it. And she would always pick on me whenever I'd order at a restaurant. And she's like, you go ahead and sit over there and order your rabbit food. I'm like, but it's good.
You were literally born a 95-year-old woman.
I told you in the last episode, I'm a grandmother.
You are a grandmother. Chef's kiss. I mean, we all have like a weird thing that we... I was always made fun of for putting milk in my ramen.
A what?
Like when you make top ramen.
Yeah, no, but why?
I drain the water. Boil it, drain all the water, then I add a little milk, and then I add the flavorings to make it creamy.
Okay, I was picturing something else, but that works.
No, it's like not a soup anymore.
Okay, I can get behind that.
It's so good. We're bringing it back around.
We're
bringing it back around. Chapter 70.
Leaving the oatmeal in the past.
We got lost. We are, though.
So, chapter 70 starts with chapter starts with Fury waiting in Bryce's apartment for her when she returns.
No time, Fury.
Listen, I give Fury a little bit of grace just because we don't know what she's going through. I wish we did, but we don't. Before Fury leaves for the summit, she wanted to tell Bryce something that she thought Bryce deserved to know, but on the condition that Bryce doesn't do anything stupid. Bryce promises that she won't do anything stupid. Fury reveals that Micah gave Hunt away to Sandriel, in case it wasn't clear in the last chapter, and that when the summit is over next week, Sandriel will be taking Hunt back to Pangaea with her, where they will deal with the Ophian rebels. Bryce says that Hunt deserves everything that's coming to him, and Fury thought that there was something between Hunt and Bryce, like maybe they were a couple. And she was like, I don't know about that. And Bryce starts to get a little defensive, saying that Hunt is a liar and that he lied to her about knowing about the synth, knowing about Danica and all that. Which, rightfully so, you should be mad. But Fury claps back and brings up a good point, saying that Danica did some messed up stuff that Bryce knew about, and all Bryce did was laugh it off and look the other way. Fury then tacks on that she thinks Hunt was being truthful about his involvement in the synth dealing and that he truly was probably just trying to get it to end. After this, again, for Bryce, anytime you try to trash talk her girl Danica, like, keep my wife's name out your mouth. Bryce then tells Fury to go back to ignoring her for 2 years and only talking to June because she's the special one. Fury then strongly hints between a relationship between her and Juniper, which is so cute.
So, yes, a precious relationship.
I love them.
Yes, agreed.
But because she doesn't outright say it, but then Bryce is like, we get it. Through love, all is possible, and love trumps everything. Fury goes on to say how she feels guilty for getting Bryce the drugs the night that Danica died, and that she disappeared because she couldn't deal with it. And then the important thing is Fury says, did June not tell you anything? And to me, that sentence is feeling a lot of like, so Lorcan did. I'm like, what do you mean? Or also, whenever Tamlin in book one, ACOTAR, says, did your mother not tell you the stories about us? Or like, did your mother not tell you anything? I'm like, this line, I need context.
Agreed. But we don't get it.
We don't get anything. we don't get context. We don't get weddings, mating bond ceremonies. It's fine. Fury then goes into asking Bryce if this is a repeat of 2 winters ago. So she pieces together that even though Juniper hasn't been telling Bryce things about Fury, Juniper's obviously telling Fury things about Bryce. And Bryce says that she's fine and it's not like that. She's just kind of really irritated with a lot going on, as she should be. Fury then tries to patch things up and makes plans to hang out once she gets back, and hopefully those plans don't involve them screaming at one another. When Fury leaves, Bryce decides that she's not going to lose a friend, and she says, not Hunt, never Hunt. And then she says, I promised I wouldn't do anything stupid. I didn't say I wouldn't do anything smart. And of that, it reminded me of the audio where it was like, you sure about that? You sure about that? Because I feel like our definitions of smart, very different, Bryce.
They're different. I thought of a different one where she's like, you promised me, or I promised people I'd be on my worst behavior. Promise me you'll be on your best
other
behavior.
Other people, that'll be on my worst behavior.
Yes, that's what it reminded me of. And that wraps up chapter 70. So, chapter 71, we go back to Hunt. So, Hunt knew exactly what would happen when the summit was over, and that is that Sandriel would take him back to Pangaea and torture him for however long she wanted to. As he got changed into a fresh uniform, he thought about how Sandriel would never let him go again, since she already lost him once to pay off her debts in the past. So, like, this time, she's got her claws in, she's not letting go, right? So, as he's being, like, relocated, he is put into cuffs, like, handcuffs that are made from Gorshian stone. And we know two things about these weird handcuffs with weird stones in them. If you try to use your powers while wearing these cuffs, you have disintegration of your blood and bones. And also your brain is turned into soup and everything leaks out your eyes and your nose.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? Like, whenever you read the first Hunger Games, because the movie doesn't specify it, but in the books, like, as they come up from the elevator and they're, like, standing in the field for the arena around the cornucopia, like, they specifically mention, like, and if you step off that block, like, you're done.
Yeah. Something bad's gonna happen. But at least Hunt knew the details of, like, what was gonna happen, so he knows not to use his powers. Like, there's no point in trying. So Pollux waits outside for Hunt, outside of the dungeon, and Bro is a little too excited for this occasion. And we have heard a little bit about Pollux in past episodes and past chapters, but not a ton of stuff. We know that him and Hunt are pretty big enemies, and that Hunt one time stopped Pollux from torturing somebody because it was going on for a really long time. And Pollux has pretty much never forgiven him for that. So as he was brought to, like, towards the summit, they did not take him through the upper area, but instead right through the lobby where Justinian still hung in the air and Victoria lay at the bottom of the sea. So we got to walk and stroll right past where his friends have been and where they are now. Which is very Pollux-coded. But also is going to sound wild. Maybe, I don't know. If I was going to torture somebody, mm-hmm. I would probably also walk them past that. It seems like very villain-coded. I'm just saying.
I mean, listen, as someone who's been reading a lot of dark romances, I also have been, like, critiquing people. I'm like, well, this person wouldn't. Like, if you want to be more effective, mm-hmm. this person would do this. But, like, I would do this because this is what this person did. And that was, like, if you really want to mess something up, do what they did.
Right. Exactly. So, like, I think it's very... I think it would have been weird if Pollux didn't do that. Right. If he literally just brought him upstairs. It would have been a missed opportunity of torture.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I just love how it sounds. Like, just imagine he doesn't do that, and then just hearing, like, some guard be like, wow, Pollux, missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity. You absolutely could have strolled him past his dead friends. Maybe do better.
Do better.
You don't get to be in the Triari if you can't do that. I feel like that's something that Sandra would say if he didn't do it.
Like, I didn't take feel like defense? This would be something that the Hind would say. Mm-hmm. Yes. I had to think, because we can't say her name, because her name hasn't been revealed yet. But I was like, wait mm-hmm. a minute. What is her other name?
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, and we will learn more about the Hind later on as the stories continue. So, Hunt was put into the back of a black van and driven to the summit. Before he could leave, though, Bryce shows up. So, she's with Sandriel, she's with the group, and she is asking and begging, essentially, Sandriel to let her buy Hunt from her. She offers 12 million more than Sandriel had even originally paid for Hunt. So she's not here to play. Like, she's got cash, she's got money. Well, she's got a check. So she is offering 97 million gold marks and a check already written to Sandra with proof of funds by Jezebel Roga.
Which I want to know Bryce, how she convinced Jezebel to do that, because I feel like Jezebel just wouldn't care.
She's in debt forever. She will never, ever not work for Jezebel Roga.
But aside from that, like, unless Jezebel found a way, which I wouldn't put it past her, to, like, know before anyone else that, like, Bryce is the Autumn King's daughter, like...
I think Jezebel knows everything. In my opinion.
Probably. Because I'm, like, also, like, you have, at this point, to, like, anyone, you have this half-breed female, and then you have a literal... Mm-hmm. Angel with lightning. I'm like,
obviously. Yeah. But also in the next couple of books, we learn a lot more about Jezebel, and I think that if we circled back, that would make it will make more sense to you.
It probably will. Again, I can't wait to relearn things that I already read.
Jezebel in book one versus Jezebel in book three, very different sides of the coin.
Yeah, I remember like one specific. Like, I remember, like, one big detail, but I don't remember, like, the tiny details. But, like, mm-hmm. again, I'm with you guys. I'm just, like, I'm here for the ride. I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, she's here for a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was not surprised that she was able to get that check. So, to sweeten the deal, Bryce then unclips her Arkishian amulet, which we learn is worth, like, 3 million gold marks. So, girl has been walking around with some fat money on her neck. Sandriel took the necklace as to look at it and then melts it into the ground. Just, like, gone. So that sucked. Hunt tries telling Bryce to leave, but she refused, right? And so she's like, fine, if you don't want my money, if you don't want my necklace, take me instead. So Bryce literally offers up herself as a physical trade for Hunt. And this is where I circle back and double down. I double down. Girl is self-sabotaging. And all the time. And I think she's selfless. Like, can you imagine? She knows what's going to happen. She's not stupid. She's heard the stories. And she's still willing to do it because he has already been through all of that. She does not want him to do that again.
I agree that she's selfless. But I think that there is someone who does selflessness a little better. Because I feel like Bryce is very in tune with her emotions, which isn't a bad thing. Like, even, I love this quote, even though it comes from Tamlin, of, like, don't be ashamed of your human heart because not everyone can feel emotions, and you should pride yourself in that. But right. I feel like sometimes she just, like, does a thing without thinking. And after, like, learning about another character who, like, does things, but she's, like, 20 million steps ahead of other people, I'm like, maybe let's...
I mean, which is fair.
Take a break, put a pin in it, and think this through.
And I'm not saying it was, like, a good... right? I'm not saying it's a good decision, but I do know
I applaud her selflessness.
Yes, and she... Grief kills her. Like, she has a very hard time handling grief, right? So, like, when the pack died... There was a time where Bryce, like, almost couldn't handle it, right? Can she go through that again? Would she rather be literally tortured by Sandriel and Pollux in the Triari than spend every day grieving Hunt and knowing what he is going through? Which would be more painful to her? From Bryce's perspective.
Yes, but I also found it a little odd because I feel like sometimes... And I might get some heat from this, from you, but hear me out. We're friends. everything's up. Okay.
It's like a white flag.
I also just found it, like, very hot and cold how she was literally, like, going into fury, being like, Hunt lied. He deserves everything that's going like that's happening to him. He deserves all that in a bag of chips. And then she's like, actually, I'm not gonna lose him. Like, I felt like that was too quick of a turn for me personally. Which
I do get, and here's where I rebuttal with a thought of she has not seen Fury in 2 years. Not only is she angry and hurt by Hunt, she's also very angry and hurt by Fury. So is Fury, as far as in the friendship line go, I don't think Bryce was ready to lay down that emotional truth of I'm not ready to lose him. Right? I don't think she was like, hey, I haven't seen you in 2 years. I actually care a lot about this person and here's what's going on. Here's everything I'm feeling. Right? So I think she was like so angry about both of those scenarios at once. And she was like, no, like he deserves everything he's going to get. But then I think when she said it, that it, she felt it and immediately regretted it, which is why she was like, I think I need to go do something.
But she also had an opportunity to come to this realization earlier whenever Fury even says, like, I think he might have been truthful. And then that's whenever she says, no, he lied. And then, like, again, Fury was very valid, and I applaud her for bringing up Danica in the clap back. Agreed. Because, like, you need to recognize your mistakes. Like, you can't always hype up people who did very questionable things. But... like, Bryce had an opportunity to also, like, talk that part through with Fear. And I get that she's been gone for 2 years. But I, if I was in Bryce's shoes, would have given Fury a little bit of grace. Because, like, even us as readers, we don't know much about Fury. But I also know that Bryce doesn't know much about Fury as well. And so, like, if... you have this friend who's this vigilante, assassin, shady person who literally everyone listens to. Like, was she gone for 2 years? Yes. But again, she probably had a reasoning behind it. And even as we discussed in previous chapters, I'm pretty sure Fury, whoever or whatever she works for, definitely didn't give her the time to be like, your friend died. Go on 2 weeks break. You deserve mental health.
And I don't think that Bryce sees Fury that way. I don't think that Bryce sees Fury as a cold-blooded assassin very often. I think she sees her more as just one of the, like, a friend, mm-hmm. one of the girls in the group, right? So I think she has a hard time separating that. I don't know. I fight for Bryce, I fight for Nesta, because I am both of them. Like, my personality is that way, and I mm-hmm. from, like, mistakes I've made in my life, I'm like, ooh, I probably would have done that. Ooh, I probably would have held that grudge. Like, so I get it. You're obviously a more forgiving person than me.
See, and the odd thing is that I'm a Nesta girly through and through, but I, for whatever reason, like, me and Bryce, we just butt heads. But I love Nesta. Yeah,
which I get. I just, I don't know. I see her side of things. I think she just grieves very hard. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I'm not saying she makes all the smart decisions, right? Yeah. Like, I think she's also young.
It's that half human heart of hers.
It's a happy at heart. She's very young. She hasn't made the drop. Like, I think there's a lot that has happened to her in her very young life, right? So it's interesting, and I get it. But I also probably would have been like, then take me instead. If you're not going to take my money, if you're not going to take my necklace, take me instead. Because, I think, I'm circling back, like, which is more painful? Sitting on her couch, knowing what is happening to Hunt every single day for the rest of his life, which I think would hurt her more than actually physically being tortured by Sandriel, knowing that Hunt is safe.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not saying it's the right choice. I'm just saying it's something that I would have considered.
I definitely probably also would have considered it, but also, why hand over the necklace before you made a deal? Like, before you have it in writing or, like, confirmation of, like, yes, I do want that deal. Just, like, here's my necklace. And then it got melted.
No, I think it was literally to sweeten the deal. Like, that was a quote. She's like, to sweeten the deal.
Like, I mean, I get that. But, like, the fact that she gave over the necklace too quickly before getting vocal confirmation.
I mean, yes. I hear you. But the necklace is also powerful, right? It's more than just money.
Oh,
right, like, it's an artifact.
I know, and we're about to know that. But
I think that Sandriel would know that. But she, like, didn't care.
I think Sandriel does know. I just, again, I don't know. I could butt heads with Bryce all day.
I know. So, back to it, though. Before, she could literally trade herself for Hunt instead. Rune came in yelling, friends behind him, and told nobody to move. He instructed Bryce to get up because she's currently on her knees, like, training and begging for his life. And he's yelling at Sandriel, bold choice, to not listen to anything Bryce is saying. So Rune is legit losing his shit right now, and Sandriel is currently holding him off with her powers. So he's not able to come any closer to her at this moment. Sandriel told Bryce that she knows a secret and like about Bryce, and announces to the room that she is the one and only daughter to the Autumn King, which, again, we have known, or the readers have known. Rune knows, Bryce knows, Autumn King knows, Ember Quinlan knows, Randall knows, nobody else knows, but now everybody knows. So no one told Sandriel who Bryce was. No one was like, hey, do you know that this girl is this one? But she, when Bryce made such a scene back in earlier in the book, she was so intrigued that she looked into her heritage, and she said it was fairly easy to figure out who she was, even though her father had attempted to bury it. So Rune then, either she put the powers down or Rune was able to step past them. He says the following: she is a female member of the Fae royal household and a full civitas of the Republic. I lay claim to her as my sister and kin. These were ancient words from laws that had never been changed. And this is where I got so mad. Bryce was pissed, right? He had no right to lay claim. Oh, 100%. Yes. He had no right to lay claim to her. But he and the original laws of the Asteri claim otherwise. She is officially Rune's property and their father's. She is a fey female of their bloodline. And until she marries, she is theirs. And she is not allowed to trade herself for Hunt. Go fuck yourself.
I get where he's coming from, but
I'm so pissed.
Get it, because he's trying to protect his sister. And no. Like,
mm-mm. I hate it. Absolutely not. You have not been there for her. even if you wanted to be, even if you tried to apologize to Bryce through Danica, whatever. No, you have, and not only do you not have a right to own her, not only that, the Autumn King now owns her. The one of the worst possible people to own her. Yeah, I don't like that about
fae culture. And I also hate how they always are, like, I get trying to help her out by, like, saying, like, oh, she, and this is what he could have said, is she is a member of the fae royal household. I hate whenever they bring up, like, the fact that she's a female. Because if you go, like, the whole thing of, like, well, she's a fae female, and females are only, like, they're only useful for X, Y, and Z, and I hate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was my beef.
Makes my blood boil. I got so mad at this.
I'm like, yeah. I was like, is she a female? Yeah. Yes, but you don't have to say it, because we all know where people are going to go with that.
Yeah, fuck you, Rune. Fuck you, Autumn King. Fuck everybody in this room. I cannot. So, as the rest of us, Bryce will never forgive him for what he's doing right now. But this conversation is now over. He drags her away, and she looked for Hunt one more time. To ensure Bryce was safe and kept far away from Hunt, Hunt says one of the most hurtful things. He owes her nothing, and she owes him nothing either. She is to never find him again. Ouch. Yeah, I get it, because they all want her to be safe, but I hate it. Bryce has the power of choice, and all of these men around her are taking that away from her. It may not be the right choice, it may not be the best choice or the safest choice, but guess what? It's her choice, because she is a person, human fae, and she is a woman who is able to make decisions.
Listen, like, listening to this part on the graphic audio was brutal.
I cannot. That's not for me. I don't think I could do it. So Bryce finally gets out of Rune's grasp and reminds him that she will never forgive him. He asks her if she knows what Pollux and Sandriel do to their slaves, but she does know. Hunt told her all of it. She's not stupid. She's very smart, and she had the information. It's not like she's, like, blind to everything. So Rune has no regrets about what he did, and he knew that Hunt would never want Bryce to put herself in that position. Guess what, boys? It's still not up to you, in my opinion. They say that it is. The laws say otherwise.
It's not up to them, but I can see where he's coming from. As concerned Big Brother, I know. I'm not happy with him, but I see his side. Awful. I see everyone's side. Cause, like,
so, we learn... Go ahead.
I'm full of rants today. Because, like, also, hypothetically, if Sandriel did accept, like, Hunt would also be losing his marbles. And then that would be a whole other ordeal of trying to get Bryce back, because she's gone, and they have to go through all these, like, nitty-gritty policies and procedures to get her back, because, again...
But there's a possibility, right? To get her back. Is there a possibility to get Hunt back once he goes there? No,
I feel like it would have been even messier if Bryce would have gone. I feel like it would have been... again, I get it, and I probably would have done the same thing, but I feel like it could have led to more of a downfall if she would have gone.
It's possible. I don't know. But once Hunt goes, there is nobody fighting for him. Bryce has no power, right? But if Bryce goes, Rune is fighting for her, Hunt is fighting for her, everybody is fighting for her to come home, would have fought for her to come home. But people will forget about Rune. People will forget about Hunt. Right? Just like people forget about Danica. Except for Bryce. But if Bryce went, I don't think people would forget about her. So, well, either way.
Yes. Yes, but because also Bryce has that familial support and all that. Hunt has been on his own for a while, because, like, even from a young age, like, he has mom. Yeah. We don't know who dad is, but, like, even mom was so low level and was so, like, she was kind, she was nice, but she didn't really have an opportunity to be a mom because people are like, ooh, angel baby with lightning, yoink, I'll take that. Mm-hmm. And, like, even whenever she died, like, people wouldn't let him grieve her or anything because he was already, like, within the service because of the whole thing with the battle on Mount Hermon. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
If he had that familial support and friends other than those of the fallen, and at this point, essentially all of his friends are dead. Like, you have Isaiah mm-hmm. flitting around somewhere. But he's, like, more of choose what hill to fight your battle on. And he's, like, I'm sure he would love to stand up for him. But he's, like, you know what? I gotta look out for me because I looked out for you back on Mount Hermon. And we all know how that ends. But I feel like if Hunt had the support system or, like, if he was a secret royalty bloodline with, even though, like, Bryce has a father that doesn't care for her, if he still had, like, that royal bloodline of, like, father figure, be like, nope, that's my property, like, I'm still gonna vouch for you, then mm-hmm. things would be different. But he doesn't have that.
Yeah, correct. No, I don't disagree with you. I think that's a fair statement. So we learned in this chapter that even Rune's friends did not know this information about Bryce being the daughter to the Autumn King, right? And they're both pretty hurt and upset about it. She was Rune's sister, but also she was their princess, right? But Rune disagrees because the Autumn King will never recognize her as kin. He also did not tell them because of his fear of the Oracle's message, which was the royal bloodline will end with you. And this could not be true if Bryce was recognized as a princess. So there lays a little bit of that as well. So Bryce found herself at the edge of the Bone Quarter after everything calmed down, and she tries to talk to Danica. She really needed her today. As she was on her knees, she felt something approaching her. Looking through the mist, she never saw the Crystallos demon attack coming. And that ends chapters 71.
I was about to say, not 6-7.
Not 6-7.
I hate it so much. Mm-hmm. That was, like, literally all the groomsmen would say at my cousin's wedding.
They were always in group seven?
No, they would always say, like, the whole stupid 6-7 thing. And I'm like, can we grow mentally?
Cannot. Unable to.
It's fine. But the ending where Bryce is like, oh, I'm, like, really need to talk with Danica. And it's, like, this calm-ish moment. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of that audio where it's, like, someone reading a book. And it's, like, something, 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 something. Turn the page. But, like, you skip something. And it's, like, boom, the bank exploded. And da-da-da-da-da. It reminded me of that audio.
Yes. Yep. You're not wrong. That's funny.
But into the chaos we go. Because in chapter 72... the Crystallos takes Bryce into the river and essentially tackles her in there. So not only is she trying to fight this demon, she's also trying not to drown. And as water is filling her lungs, she's trying to blindly fight this demon. She's kind of giving it handed to her. She's getting scratched. But as she's blindly fighting the Crystallos, she is pulled by the water from Declan. And he says, I've got you, I've got you. Which, for Bryce, that's very triggering. Mm-hmm. Because she remarks how Hunt had said those very same words the first time she was attacked all those years ago. And how this moment felt wrong because Hunt should be the one here saying these words. And he should be free. Mm-hmm. That's brutal.
Yeah.
Declan then swims Bryce to the edge of the river where Rune helps her out the rest of the way. And Flynn has a gun positioned at the spot where the Crystallos was, just making sure it doesn't make another guest appearance. Bryce takes inventory of her injuries and notices a gash on her arm from the claws, but thankfully there is not a bite mark. So she doesn't have to worry too much because it's literally, 'tis but a scratch. If you see Monty mm-hmm. Python, you know.
It's about a flesh wound.
Tis about to scratch. Deck doesn't ask before he uses his healing magic, which I want to know more about this kid. Because It's not as strong as a Medwitch's healing magic, but is super rare amongst the Fae. And the fact that he has healing magic, he is the son of a lord, so he's like future lord of a Fae court. I want to know more.
Yes, we would like deck lore.
Deck lore, fury lore.
Novellas for all.
You will get a novella. You will get a novella. Yes. As soon as Deck is done with his healing magic, essentially setting it in, because the magic is still working on her, but he doesn't have to like be there to monitor her the whole entire time, Bryce tells Rune that he is dead to her. And this part, because you see my notes, don't you? Because Bryce says, "You're dead to me." And then she pulls out her phone, shows it to him, and then, like, shows her deleting his contact. And I'm like,
delete.
Sweet baby girl. That was so funny. Stupid. Because it's a contact and it's a phone. He can write you a letter, he can write you an email, he can pop into Griffin Antiques. You can't. Deleting his context does nothing. I thought that was so childish. There is
so funny.
Oh my gosh, there's something that I saw. I feel like there was a movie that did like the exact same thing. I hated that she did that. I was like, so stupid. Also, the amount of times where I feel like we should have had an account not only for Jezebel threats and, hey, Ethan place on ball. I feel like we should have had a count for how many times Bryce says, "You're dead to me," or "I'm done with you," or "I'm not talking to you," to Rune. Because the amount of times she says, "I'm done with you," Rune should just be like, "Okay, see you tomorrow."
Yeah, see you in an hour.
Because, like, it doesn't last.
Like, no, it doesn't.
Your feelings aren't valid. Like, you can be mad, but I'm just like, it's...
Is that like a brother-sister-sibling kind of thing? Like, is that... I don't know. Maybe it's just a Bryce thing.
I don't know.
But she does say that a lot.
She does.
He knows that she doesn't mean it.
And it reminds me of that one TikTok of the little kid where I guess, like, their dog grabbed the elf on the shelf and it's, like, in their mouth. And this little kid's, like, bawling his eyes out, being like, "I hate you!" And, like, just wishing all of these terrible things to this dog. I'm like, it's giving the same vibe.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Anywho, after the little childish, "I'm gonna delete your phone contact" thing, Bryce goes back to her apartment to once again take inventory of her injuries, or lack thereof, and she nearly weeps at the sight of her unharmed tattoo, because that is literally like the last physical connection. Like, does she have the jacket? Sure. But like, the tattoo that Danica gave her is like, that is literally in her. And I can get where she's coming from with that. It's like almost like she has the jacket and she has other things of Danica's, but I feel like the tattoo is like the biggest security blanket. And I feel like if I was Bryson, if, like, something happened to that, I would be like, you know what? This is my 13th reason. I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Yeah. No joke.
But as Bryce is, again, looking at all the injuries, looking at the tattoo, and just so thankful that nothing happened to it, the words inked there that Danica insisted that they get, and she brings this up again, and this is, like, the part that made me a little uncomfy, is that, like, did they get this tattoo? Yes. Bryce recalls that she was too plastered to object. I don't know, that just made me uncomfy. Like, and it kind of also brings up Fury's point of being like, you let Danica do whatever, and you just, like, laughed it off, or just, like, turned the cheek. But I'm just like, I don't like that. But then Bryce spirals and gets lost in her grief about losing the pack, losing Hunt, and losing the amulet. And she's not going great for anybody right now. And I fear it only is going to get worse.
Yes, you are not wrong. Because in chapter 73, we actually leave Bryce, we go back to Hunt, right? So Hunt is officially arriving at the summit. we are reminded that the summit is held every 10 years, and each summit is attended by one representative of the Asteri and important people within the territory. So the area Micah controlled was way smaller than Pangaea, but he actually held 4 of the summits, one for each quadrant. So Hunt has been held for 5 days in like a desert holding cell, essentially. He was given fresh clothes for this meeting and this summit, a uniform essentially for Sandriel to show him off. So everyone that was important is attending the summit, including Fury, as far as we know. We are also fully introduced name-wise, for the most part, to the full triari of Sandriel. So, we have Pollux, which we know, who is the Hammer. We have the Hind, who is a Spybreaker, who we don't know their name. And then the next three, we don't know the names of them either, but we do know their, like, code names, essentially. So, we have a thin, dark-haired female, the Harpy, the black-winged male, the Hellhound, and we have the cold-eyed angel, the Hawk. All of these will come back into play. So we will learn lots more about them. But it's nice that we have the full list now. So it's noted also that the meeting is full of everyone except for humans and half-breeds. None of them are there. So everyone starts arriving. So we have Jessica Roga, and she arrived decked out. She's super fancy, looks beautiful, and then we're reminded that she looks like she is from the House of Flame and Shadow, which is the house that she claims. This next moment was wild because Queen Hypaxia strolled in, which is the witch who would be recognized as queen today since her mother had passed. The witch we've all been talking about, right? The witch who is supposed to be betrothed to Rune. We learn that she was raised deep in the mountains and to be kept away from the Republic as a child. And who was Hypaxia? But the Medwitch at the fucking clinic. And literally every crime scene. And everywhere. Every time we hear, oh, a Medwitch arrived, it was her. So, wild. Which we've been telling you guys this whole time. We're like, pay attention to the witch. Pay attention to the witch. Because the witch is very important. The witch is actually the queen. So the River Queen did not show up, but there were representatives for there in her place. Therion came and another woman. When Hunt saw him, though, we learn that Hunt is mad at Therion for bringing Bryce on the barge that night. Bro, that's not why we get to be mad. Maybe you should be mad at your own choices.
I have a random thought. And I think it's going to be a miss, because I don't know if you've seen Star Wars.
Yes, but I probably could not name any of the characters. Maybe, like, one character.
You might get this reference, because you can't not know this character. But, to me, the River Queen sending Therion in her place, to me, was the equivalent of Queen Amidala sending Jar Jar Binks in her place.
I know who Jar Jar Binks is. Was he sent to a meeting?
Yeah. Jar Jar is Jar Jar. Jar Jar's in his own world. And to me, Therion is Jar Jar.
That's a hot take.
Yeah, I'll have more words as the series continues, but
yes,
I just came to the conclusion, and I fully stand behind Therion is Jar Jar Binks. Sorry to
Therion any Binks.
Therion stands, but sorry.
That's wild. So, yeah, okay, all right. I don't know Star Wars enough to, like, even have an opinion on that reference, so I will let our listeners decide on whether or not they're mad.
Please let us rant Star Wars in the comments.
Yes. At this point, Rune still does not know that Queen Hypaxia is the Medwitch, that they're the betrothed, all the things, right? Next comes Sabine and the Prime. And after them, the Autumn King, looking just like Bryce. And Hunt's like, ah, yes, I see it. They literally look the same. I'm understanding now. And then Rune came in behind them. So Rune looks at Hunt and shakes his head. But not in a disappointing shake, though. It was more of like, I'm sorry, and I understand, shake. And then 49 angels dropped out of the sky to march into the lobby, like absolute drama queens. The angels don't cut. They don't go through the doors. They just like drop in from the clouds.
I mean, but how many of those angels are like free angels or angels enslaved by Micah? Or Micah's like, you know, it'd be really cool, you guys. I want you guys, all 49 of you, just drop. Like,
you're probably not wrong.
And walk.
Maybe one drama queen controlling all of them. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, no, technically, because these angels were sent by the Asteri.
Oh.
To, like, remind everybody who's in charge. So maybe the Asteri?
The Asteri are very big, like...
make a scene. Yeah. And they were like, let's all drop in from the sky. We don't use doors.
Yeah.
Asteri, so, big and drama. It could be that. Yeah, it could be that, right? So the archangels came in next, which is, again, Micah and Sandriel. And then we are kind of taken back into the thoughts of Hunt, where he mentions that he knows that his punishment from Sandriel would last literal decades. Like, he is never, ever going to get out of her grasps. So I think a little bit's just, like, sinking in at a time. So everyone's sitting around this room, right? And they're surrounded by huge televisions, and, like, everything is very official. And as the televisions turn on, we are given a look at the Asteri for the first time, right? 7 thrones are lined up, with one of them being empty, again, for the Asteri that was killed, which we learned about in previous chapters. And each Asteri held the actual power of a star, which is wild. So, and a wild moment happens, where Rune talks to Hunt in his head. He tells Hunt it is a bold move to raise his head while bowing to the Asteri, but in his mind. And he mentions it is a gift from his mother's kin. And we know 0 things about Rune's mom.
Although she was very nice lady.
Nice lady. So nice. Great lady. Nothing else. We know nothing. So this mind-speaking skill is from his mom. So we learn that Rune also has eyes on Bryce. So people are watching her, making sure she is safe, I guess. Rune now knows about Hypaxia, obviously, because they're in the same room. And he's a little upset. Hypaxia was being looked at by all of the Asteri, and it was officially crowned Queen of the Witches. So that is done. They surveyed the room, and then we learn that the lead Asteri, who is called Rigelus, is in the body of a little boy, which is so weird.
Yeah. Like, you had options. Powerful. And you picked
You had options. That. And you... Yeah, why? That's weird. But okay, you did. Anyways. So, the meeting was supposed to be about how to handle the end of the war, but we knew that it's only going to be about how humans suck and it's all their fault. So, essentially, like, this meeting's going to be like, how can we still stop them? The Asteri finally logged off, and Micah officially declared the meeting in session. And then that ends chapter 73. And then we go into chapter 74, which is a very short chapter. On Audible, I think it's like 4 minutes and some odd seconds. Like, super, super short. But we are no longer at the summit. We are now back with Bryce. So Bryce is at the gallery, right? And she tore apart the check that Jessica had gave her. She was able to see everyone arrive at the summit, and was able to see Hunt with his fully grown wings, because everything's being televised. So she's watching it right on the TV. She knew fully what Sandriel and Pollux would do to her if she would have gone, but again, it was her choice. So she also doesn't believe Hunt's final words to her, because she would have said the same thing and made the same choice if the roles were reversed. So she's like, I know he didn't mean that. Which I'm glad that she didn't overthink that. Because I think that would have been, like, a classic Bryce move. To be like...
To overthink it?
Well, he said all these things.
I don't think she would have overthought it.
Really? I think... I fully believe she would have been like, I cannot believe he said that. Like, has he thought about that the whole time? Like...
No.
I'm glad that she didn't overthink that. So, Bryce opens up a letter that was delivered, and it contained a white opal inside it. It was from Isaiah. And it said, Naomi found... this white opal on the barge, and she thought you might want it back. And also, he is sorry. Not Isaiah, though. Probably Hunt.
Dude, so, if I could give Lahava Hunt a hug right now.
Oh, I definitely. Just want
a hug, sweet baby boy.
Yes. Lahava asks if they just go back to normal, and what is normal, anyways? Thank you, Lahava. That is a good question. Bryce finally tells her how good of a friend she truly is, and it's about goddamn time.
Justice for Lahaba.
Justice for Lahaba. I am Bryce, but also I would not treat Lahaba that way.
Yeah. Also, yes. Like, why buy Syrinx, but also not work to try to buy Lahaba as well? Like, again, well, they had Syrinx a little bit of a
danger. She was about to get rid of him to like a warlock or something, right? Like yeah, he was to going to a dangerous fight. Place.
Yeah,
correct. Lahaba is a slave, yes, but safe in the library, has TV, takes care of books, not in danger in Bryce's life. Syrinx was about to be given away or sold or traded and was in immediate danger. And Bryce couldn't handle losing anything else in that moment because she was still grieving the pack.
I agree. But also, like, save your friend, please. Please.
I mean, I think, you know, I think I'm if sure she would have been in
immediate danger, then, like, she then would absolutely. Have. Absolutely.
Yes. 100%. I think
maybe the knock should have been inspiration to start saving.
Maybe. And it might have been. I don't know. But that ends the chapters that we are covering today. So thank you for joining us. If you are hanging out, we are going into the House of Theories and Lore. If you're not, log off and then come back later and watch House of Theories and Lore once you have finished the series. So if you're hanging out with us, here we go. If not, we will see you next week. Into the House of Theories and Lore we go. Okay, so House of Theories and Lore. I have a question. So in the chapter where everyone's in the room and the Asteri show up, Hunt mentions that the feel of the Asteri's power was so strong that it like felt like it was sucking away his own power, right? So does how Hunt felt when he first met the Asteri tell us about his heritage, or does everyone else feel the same way around them, right? So, like, his power was being sucked away and was like a wisp on the wind, essentially. And they also mentioned that Hypaxia didn't even flinch when the Asteri looked at her. But also, like, other people literally threw up once they logged off. Like, they physically got ill. So, here's my question. Was this a nod to who Hunt's, like, fathers are?
I don't know,
or
a nod.
Was everyone else in the room feeling the same way that he was feeling?
I think it's giving Volg. To where I think, like, if you're not aptitude to Volg and the little parasite that they are, literally, I feel like that they just have that control or that essence around them. But the fact that Hypaxia didn't even flinch, to me, that tags on more to the fact to where we think she could potentially be a descendant of Irene, and that her teachers mm-hmm. are teachers from the tower. Because, right. I mean, as we know, Irene literally, she founded how to get rid of this parasite. And so if mm-hmm. Hypaxia has been taught by her alleged tower tutors, like, she's going to know, and she's going to be able to just not be affected by them. So I don't know if it
right.
nods necessarily to Hunt's heritage, but I think it could back up the fact that a lot of these key players in Crescent City are descendants from our Throne of Glass people.
Okay, that's fair. And I think people could feel the power, right? Because again, people got sick after they logged off, mm-hmm. like physically ill. So I think that you could feel it, but it's just interesting how he felt like his power was being sucked away.
Because, again, Volg behavior, because they feed mm-hmm. off of, like, your feelings of despair and trauma.
Yeah. Can you imagine being so powerful that you're powerful through a TV? Like, the Asteri's not there. They're on the TV.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being big enough. Powerful?
I could see it.
I just could not imagine it, like, for myself.
I could see it. Also,
wants all the power.
I don't. Also, Rigulus?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So him picking little boy body, also giving Bone Carver.
And I had also thought that as well. And a reference for, if anyone forgot, in ACOTAR, like in the prison, is the Bone Carver. And the Bone Carver shows up as a little boy to Feyre.
Who is Nyx?
Supposedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Not confirmed.
I kind of back up that theory of he appears to what kills you.
It's possible. Yeah, right? So the theory is, like, the Bone Carver shows up as what will kill you. So Feyre saw Nyx.
Technically did.
And he technically did, and then Nessa saved her. Right, Rhysand saw, oh my god, what's his name?
Jurian.
So Rhysand saw Jurian, who supposedly would kill him, which I don't know if we have more information on that at all. I can't remember.
I think I spiraled the other day, because people are like trying to figure out who the betrayer is going to be, and I think, hot take, it could potentially be Lucien. Because he's, like, working as, I wouldn't call him a spy, but he's, like, Tamlin is, like, his trauma bond friendship buddy, and so he has, like, this really close connection that he's not necessarily able to, like, completely cut Tamlin off, even though Tamlin is trash, but he has this connection to Tamlin, he has this connection to the Night Court through Feyre and through Elaine, if she would just accept the bond, and then he also has this...
Girl, why are you raising your eyebrows?
Because I don't care who ends up with who. I just want Lulu to be happy because he's
not gonna be happy with Elaine.
He could be.
He doesn't even like him.
But if she accepts it, then it'll all be peachy keen. Listen, again, I don't care who ends up with who. I just want people to be happy. Because I already have like a theory on Elaine, Azriel, and Gwen, but it's a musical reference, so you're not gonna get it.
Probably not.
It's really sad, and I'm not going to go into it, because we're talking about Lucien, but I think because he has a connection to Tamlin, he has a connection to the Night Court through Feyre and Elaine, if she says yes, and then she also has that, like, kind of connection with Jirian, Vasa. I don't know how close, also, Vasa is to... I always want to call him Kyoshi, but that's the Avatar.
Oh, Koshay.
Koshay. She, like... Also, her situation's very, like, Swan-like. So, like, they're not close, but they have that connection because she's literally there. But I think that he could, Lucien, like, get more trust through the Night Court. And also, like, not only through his bonds with Feyre and Elaine, but also, like, if Aerys, who I believe is not a real bad guy, he's actually a good guy, like, that's his brother, so I feel like maybe we could have a little bit of a brotherly reunion. I think that maybe Jirian could be manipulating Lucien and using Lucien to get to Rhysand, and then that could be the betrayal. And then, therefore, the Bone Carver theory would still stand, because Nyx technically killed Feyre, and then there's still an opportunity for Jirian to kill Rhysand, because... as an eyeball and a ring, he's not going to do anything. And I don't know if there's past. I can't remember if there's like a past story between Jirian and Rhysand. Because I know like.
There is. I just don't recall. Like, I know that there is. I just don't know.
Because I remember like Jirian and Amarantha's beef because he liked her sister. But I can't remember if like even back in the day there was like a specific thing to where like him and Rhysand butted heads. Or if they're, like, have yet to butt heads.
I don't remember. That's a good question. I am unsure.
Oh, no. I guess I have to do a reread.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
So, another thing I wanted to talk about is, like, obviously, Rune's mind-speaking abilities.
Yes.
Right? A gift from his mother's kin. Who else has mind-speaking abilities in the Massverse?
We see. Rhysand.
We say it. He's the naughty.
Do you want to hear a theory?
Yes, I want to hear theories.
So, people are speculating that Rhysand's mom and sister are not dead.
And I agree. Yes.
People think don't know what happened to mom. But people think that his sister, who also potentially could be Asriel's mate, allegedly, I don't know enough about that, but people also think that. But they think that a portal was open because, as we know, portals are a thing from Throne of Glass and Crescent City. But they think that she opened a portal and found her way into Lunathien. And again, as we know, Rune's mom is the only one who has, like, caught the Autumn's King's attention. Like, she is the only one that was specifically chosen by the king, and he's like, I want that. So, and she's also Fae. She has that background, and we know that it's she, or Rune has the Daemadi. They don't say it, he's a Daemadi, but he is. But he has that ability to speak it in people's minds from his mom, so maybe Rune's mom is Rhysand's sister.
Rhysand's sister. Interesting.
And Rhysand is a descendant of the Dorian bloodline, because I also see a lot of similarities with them.
And that's not confirmed.
Not confirmed, but like, the details make sense. But then whenever, I forgot what book they go into of, like, them picking on Rhysand's last name and saying that it's a silly last name, I'm like...
But we don't know it.
Dorian's last name isn't funny. So, like, that's the only thing that makes me skeptical of, like, them all being related. But I could see Rune's mom being Rhysand's sister.
Yeah, agreed. I think there is more to that.
Because I think they were saying, like, that maybe it was, like, the Pool of Starlight that Tamlin has is the portal.
Could be a portal. Recall. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. What do you have this week?
So, my thing is I see a lot of similarities between Crescent City and Throne of Glass characters, and we even, like, not outrightly have confirmation that they're connected, but, like, we kind of learn through Lydia saying, like, oh, this is my son, Brandon, who is named after one of my descendants, and as we know, that's someone else's descendant. But for me, like, the part that made me icky with Danica essentially, like, taking advantage of Bryce's drugged up state to put the horn in her back, it was very Elena coded, and I hated it. I feel like Danica is a combination of Elena and Nehemia. 100%.
Yeah, I can see that.
But also going into Bryce promising Fury that she's not going to do anything stupid and then does not so smart thing. At least, like, I can see where she's coming from with sacrificing herself. But the whole giving the amulet thing without verbal confirmation, still, I'm just like... but... like, for me, there's Bryce, and personally for me, her and Aina, or I combine their name, Aina, Aelin and Selena, I feel like they're so similar. But I feel like Aelin is who Bryce is trying to be, if that makes sense.
I see what you're saying. I do feel like they both had very different upbringings. Like, 100%. Yes, Bryce has childhood trauma, like, from the Autumn King and all of these things. But, like, overall, Bryce grew up in a very loving home, right? Like, versus, like,
the assassins.
Selena, who grew up in a very different environment, forced to become an assassin, like... very tough texture on the outside and knows what it's like to, like, truly suffer day in and day out. Do I think either Selena or Aelin would have traded themselves for Hunt? Yes.
I think they would, but I think Aelin she thinks, like I said, she thinks 20 steps ahead. She thinks of all the consequences because, sorry, this part breaks my heart every time I mention it, but like she purposefully doesn't tell people her plans because mm-hmm. she's already thought of everything and she doesn't need to. And the only time that she did tell someone her plans, it was Sam. Yep. And mm-hmm. homeboy was hoping that she wasn't going to listen to said plan because she never did. But like even, I forget which book Aelin like knows that she's the one that has to sacrifice herself. And then her friends literally vote on her to be Harry Potter and sacrifice herself. Like yep. there's that. And people, rightfully so, get mad at Aelin for, like, not telling them, like, what her idea was because they want to be included because things could very much go south. Bryce does the exact same thing, but I feel like sometimes, I don't know, some of the things that she does, I'm like, I feel like you should have told someone, if that makes sense.
I mean, there's lots of times that Aelin would have, should have told somebody, right? But also, I think that Aelin is again, been through a lot more than Bryce. I think she's more mature than Bryce. So I think that yes. that is a part of it. But I'm not disagreeing on the similarities between the two.
Yeah, because they're very similar. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
I do agree that they're very similar. Yes.
I just feel like the way that they both make promises, I feel like one does it a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. That's all I had for this week. Do you have anything else?
No, because we already talked about the part with Bryce and Rune. And then the part where Fury said, did June not tell you anything? I already kind of went into that and how I mm-hmm. thought that was very similar to Tim Tam. Yeah. Yeah, that's all I got.
Well, that's all I have this week. That's exciting.
I'm not ready for next week.
I know. I'm dreading it.
Listen, we should
have... It's the hardest part of the whole book.
We should have stopped after... I forgot what chapter it is. Whatever chapter everyone was last happy, be like, oh, and the book ends, and everyone lives happy ever after the end.
That's all we're covering.
Everything's happy. Like, I see people post videos of that with the Assassin's Blade, and they read up until, like, right before, I think, the last novella, yep. and they're like, and then everyone lived happily ever after. Sam and Selena got married. They're exploring the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed. Well, unfortunately, we're not doing that. We will be going into the sad stuff. So, I know. All right, Pete. But here we go. We'll do it next week on The Goodish Girls.
Yeah.
I know. It's sad.
Can't get enough of The Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.